Welcome to Call Your Girlfriend,
a podcast for long distance besties everywhere.
I'm Amina Tuso.
And I'm Ann Friedman.
On this week's agenda, an update about one of our favorite scammers, Wendy Deng, a nightmare contraception app that is scamming the women of Europe. Kim K had her baby, DJ Khaled is repping Weight Watchers, and CVS is trying to get woke. Plus, content warning as we delve into the Me Too backlash and talk a bit about what the movement's critics are getting completely wrong.
Hey, girl.
Hey, hey, hey. How you doing?
I'm like fake upbeat, but yeah, doing great.
Oh my God. I am also fake upbeat, aka sick with a cold and day two menstrual and like worried about the apocalypse.
Yo, like that sneezing plus like bleeding sensation, the worst.
I mean, there's a lot of dripping happening over here. I'm sorry for the graphic depiction, but like it is, yeah.
You are not even sorry.
I'm not even sorry. You're correct. I had like a news-free weekend, and so I'm also coming back to, you know, the news, which is like a come down, not like a comeback.
Nothing happened while you were away.
Good to
Literally
know.
Nothing.
Good to know.
Nothing happened except my favorite thing happened.
What is your favorite thing?
Wendy Deng update.
Scammer callback.
Our favorite scammer. Okay. For the people who don't know who Wendy Deng is, really quickly, just read her Wikipedia. But Wendy Deng is like the bad bitch to end all bad bitches. She like got this American couple to adopt her, and then she had the wife teach her English, sponsor her visa, pay for college, and then she had the husband marry her, get rid of the wife.
Classic.
She's an icon. And then that was like her first husband. And then she had like many other husbands, maybe, who knows. But then the relevant husband is that she married Rupert Murdoch, who like, if you don't know him, you should also Wikipedia him. He is not a bad bitch. But anyway, the Wall Street Journal, and this is how you know it's true. When the Wall Street Journal goes after the Cheeto, it's always true because, you know, they're in bed together.
You wouldn't bite the hand that... P.S. I feel compelled to note that she and Rupert Murdoch are now actually divorced. P.S.
Yes. Okay. They are divorced. This is part of
right, right, right. I'm just saying, as you did the marital status update, I was like, you know,
true.
She's on the market.
Because allegedly, according to the Wall Street Journal, she cheated on Rupert with Tony Blair, erstwhile British Prime Minister.
Erstwhile Prime Minister Tony Blair.
There's like a really disturbing anecdote about how she said his butt was cute. Anyway, Google it. Do it yourself.
Google but Tony anyway, Blair's the- butt or the quote. Guess which one I'm Googling right now.
Yes, do it. The FBI will come for you in 2 minutes flat. But the other thing that is remarkable about Wendy Deng is that she's kind of the reason that we have Jovanka at all. She like either set them up or got them back together after they broke up or whatever, but they're really good friends. It's like how rich people are friends, like Illuminati level friends. Anyway, according to the Wall Street Journal, the deep state warned Jared about, like the deep state intelligence community warned Jared about the fact that Wendy Deng is probably a Chinese spy. And I was like, this is racist, but also I'm very compelled. And I don't know what to believe or who to believe, but it was the best plot twist of my life.
My jaw is hanging open and it's not from the Google search for Tony Blair's butt. Let me just put it that way.
Okay, what did the quote say?
Oh no, I searched for Tony Blair's butt, like images.
Oh, no. Here's the thing that I will say about Wendy. She definitely married Rupert Murdoch for money. Like, we know that. But everybody since then, she has been with because they have a good body. So if she...
Her intentions are pure.
Exactly. Her intentions are pure. She's had, like, the glow up of the decade. Just look up, like, old Wendy Deng and then look up, like, new Wendy Deng and you will lose it.
At one of our, I think it was our LA live show a few years ago, we had like a full slideshow of the Wendy Deng glow up. So this is like, you know, you can put it together yourself with a Google image search and some like the Wikipedia timeline. God.
But like, Mike could be a spy.
Okay, what is the proof that she's a spy? Like, tell me, like, what are the receipts?
I mean, Anne, it's the Wall Street Journal. Mm. And the fact that the deep state, Sorry, the intelligence community. Hold on, I'm going to pull up the article because it's too
good. Is the deep state just racist against Wendy Deng? This is the question.
And here's the thing. All of these things can exist and be true.
True. She could be a spy and the deep state could be racist.
Is what I'm saying. So what happened is that like Jared was warned about Wendy Deng. So they were like, listen, her like interest with like Beijing are too close. Keep an eye on that. But here's the deal with Jared. Jared is literally not keeping an eye on anything. So if he's not getting bamboozled by a Russian spy and he gets bamboozled by a Chinese spy instead, can you even say bamboozle? Isn't that like a racist word? I'm not sure.
Impression.
I've been watching a lot of MASH this weekend, so it's cool.
Ooh.
But anyway, it's just like everything is like murky and like not okay. Here's the deal. Do I believe that like all rich people use their close friendships to powerful people to further their interests of like governments that they're in bed with? Like, of course, at some point. So
this is just what it means to be rich.
Exactly. I'm just like, I'm sorry. If you're Wendy Deng and you're not doing counterintelligence for like any kind of government, like what is the point even?
Right.
Yeah. And to be fair, like when Jared and Ivanka go other places and they like cozy up to people, their intelligence communities tell them like these two are trying to these two are American spies. So you know what? Like all of it is
fine. But the joke's on them because they're not American spies. They're just trying to get, they're just like American struggling like business people.
I know. Like struggling like those two.
Like it would be a compliment to call Jovanka American spies because that would mean they were doing anything in the interest of this country. It would be a compliment to refer to them as spies.
I know. I'm like, as long as they go to jail, I don't care if it's for espionage or money laundering. Like I don't care. All I know is that, like, incompetence will be the reason why. So I just love a good Wendy Deng story. So I'm glad that she's back. I am a little worried, though, that, like, she hasn't changed her name. Like, her full name is Wendy Deng Murdoch. And I was like, Wendy, just drop the Murdoch. Like, you're a free agent now.
I can't hold it against her. Like, I remember having a conversation with a friend once who was trying to figure out about how she decided what to name her children. And she was like, yeah, for a while I thought about just giving them the last name Rockefeller so that they would like get really great treatment around New York. And I feel like it's the same thing. Like a name is an important thing in certain circles and like get what you need to get.
That is so funny because one, you know that there's always like, I feel like every year there's a story about a phony Rockefeller. So
like, oh my God, completely.
So nobody will believe you. There's always like some German guy who's like, I'm a Rockefeller and like stealing people's art. But also this like very devious housewives in the Beverly Hills Housewives franchise. She like told people that she was a Ford, like Henry Ford Ford. And it is not working out for her either. But yeah, maybe I will change my name to Rockefeller.
Yeah, in the like feminist marriage name change debate, I'm like, in order to access money on your own is like, I'm like, you know, I still probably wouldn't do it, but I also respect it as a reason. I'm like, I see what you're doing.
Right.
There's a strategy there.
Like, I'm like, no matter who I marry, I'm going to change my name to Winfrey.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay. And thank you for the inspiration.
You're welcome. And also, side note that is apropos of nothing, my friend was on a flight with Stedman this week.
No, Stedman?
Completely. Honeygram was on the flight.
Honeygram. Oh my God. Honeygram, when the edible wears off, like he is so alive.
I also felt like a cold chill through my heart when she texted me, Stedman's on my flight, and then made clear, Oprah Stedman, as if there's any other Stedman.
I know,
Stedman.
It's like, which other Stedman do you... Like, I don't even know if Stedman is his first name or his last name, and frankly, I don't care.
I know.
But like, yeah, I'm like, Stedman, future FLOTUS, done.
Oh my God, I can't, we're not even...
Oprah makes Stedman fly Winfrey? Commercial. I love this. Oh yeah, he definitely goes by Stedman Winfrey.
Stedman Honeygram Winfrey is not going back to Graham, like, if there is ever a divorce. He's just going to be Stedman Winfrey forever. So, like...
That's amazing.
This game works both directions, gender-wise.
Guess what? If you don't get married, you don't have to get divorced. Oprah knows exactly what she was doing. Ugh,
protect your money, never file jointly.
That's amazing. I would lose my mind if Stedman was on my flight.
Thank you. Okay. Oh my God. Let's talk about this Lolio contraception app because I am like dying.
Okay. So I feel like in the earlier days of CYG, we definitely talked about like rhythm methods and all sorts of like fertility woo-woo stuff.
Okay.
That people were doing. Can I finish?
Yeah. I just wanted the terminology to be correct.
Okay. What was correct? What was incorrect so far?
Well, rhythm method is not like not what all of these apps are doing. It's what some of the apps are doing.
I know. I haven't said that yet.
Okay. Sorry. Rhythm method is just like a red flag. Okay. Just start over. Sorry.
No, I was just saying that like in the early days of CYG, we talked a lot about like fertility and different fertility methods and that people were using. Things that were alternatives to hormonal contraceptives. Anyway, I was reading about one such app that is called Natural Cycles. It's a European app that basically it tells you that it can, the algorithm will like measure all the like the fertility factors that you need to find out like when you're fertile. I used to use a period tracker, and I like completely trust an application to do period tracking for me because literally it's just a calendar. Trusting an application algorithm to tell me about fertility is something that honestly, to me, is just like big red flag. I'm like, do I really want to trust the, you know, these like greedy public sector people or like private sector people to do this for me? Anyway, it turns out that Natural Cycles, the app, is like being sued right now because 37 women have gotten pregnant from using it, or misusing it rather.
Because the app said that they were not fertile and they went on to have sex with a person with a penis and got pregnant, is what you're saying.
And got pregnant. And it's just, you know, it's like part of it is like very LOL, like funny. But the other part of it to me is I'm like, God, why do we keep trusting Silicon Valley with like these really important parts of our body? And I completely understand the inclination to do that. I just feel that like the tech people don't have the trust level that you should trust them to be your like fertility application. You know what I'm saying? It's like, don't put your hands in the hands of the iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, I lay much of this at the feet of public officials who certified this Natural Cycles app as a medical device for contraception. So basically, they did some clinical studies apparently on women using this app or people using this app and about its effectiveness, and then like gave it this certification that was like akin to a medical device like an IUD or like a hormone-based drug or something like that. And like to me, that is like, you know, the distinction here of like, are you using an app in order to record and track info about your bod that you want to like use to make choices? Like definitely one thing. Versus, are you using an app to tell you definitively it is okay to have unprotected sex right now with a dude? Like those to me seem very, very different things.
100%. I'm like, the pedometer on the iPhone like barely works. Why would you trust? Why would you trust the fertility pedometer? No way.
Oh my God. Can I tell you a sidebar about that is related to both Fitbit and CYG, which is a friend of the podcast was on a different airplane and saw a person shaking her arm in order to get her steps in every hour with her Fitbit on the plane.
I've seen those cheaters.
Totally. And was like, what is going on with this person? Like, you know, took her a minute to figure out what this woman was doing, and then peered around like the aisle and could see her phone and she was listening to CYG. So shout out. Shout out to all CYG listeners gaming the Fitbit like pedometer system.
Oh my God, the Fitbit fraudsters. Hello. That's right. Amazing. That is amazing for many reasons.
But like with a slightly lower stakes than an app called Natural Cycles telling you it is okay to that you are what definitely like not fertile at the moment and cannot get pregnant, which is bonkers to me.
I know. This app has 700,000 users worldwide. Like that's, I mean, you know, like 37 pregnancies doesn't seem like a lot, but actually it is a lot.
Yeah.
And also technology. I want it to be used for good, and it can. But I'm like, wow, I'm such a Democrat. I'm like, where's the regulation?
For sure, though, like, this is why we have a Food and Drug Administration. This is why regulatory bodies decide what is effective and approve things and tell people to use it, which is why I lay this at the feet of, like, regulatory officials as much or more so as the app makers, because it's like, you have failed in your duty by telling people that this is okay to use.
And if you came to me and you had an app baby, I would make you keep it.
An app baby. Oh my God. Wow. Wow.
For, I'm like, this like, is where this I draw the line.
That's where your politics like really get real. If I brought this on myself by like having an app baby.
And I would make you call it and I would make you call it iPhone. And then I'm like, I will help you raise this baby.
Make me call it Natural Cycles. I am so annoyed by the title of this app too. It is a particular, what's that word? Bugaboo. To quote Destiny's Child.
I know. That about like making it seem like natural, like as opposed to like, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. Coding things as natural is really kind of upsetting to me in an era when it's like, okay, how many million choices do we make every day that are like not natural on like purely biological grounds, or like how many things, like it is not natural for me to put like expensive face oil on my face every day. Like, shouldn't my body just be creating oil? Like it's not like natural to want to curtail like when you're getting pregnant at all, like by some definitions. It's not natural to take hormones for any reason, like by some definitions. Like, you know, I mean, there's something about it that feels like creating a category that doesn't need to exist for just like a choice that some people might want to make about their bodies. Like, I really have maybe this is some West Coast baggage about things being called natural.
No, like, it's like women's baggage, because I think that's true, right? And it's like entrusting something as serious as contraception to people who do this kind of marketing is like very dangerous.
Right. The framing of an app like this as something that is like it should just be called like body information app or something like that.
Oh my
you know,
God.
Like something really
don't
catchy.
Don't say it on the show. That's my $1 million
idea. Body info.
I know. Like,
and body info is actually the name of my app, baby.
Body info. But you know, it's really funny too, because every time I've read about it was like clearly like going around in all the tech news, like Tech Bro, like publications or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I love reading the comments on those, because I was like, I bet you they all say the same thing. And surprise, surprise, they did. It was all some sort of variation of like, if you can't handle the risks that come with having sex, then you shouldn't have sex. And I was like, wow, spoken like somebody, one, who doesn't have to carry a baby. And two, also like, I'm like, who are these 21st century people who think that like all sex is about procreation? I'm like, are we really doing this? Like, are we like,
right.
like that was really surprising to me, coming from people who, you know, like you think should have like more, I don't know, like liberal scientific attitudes towards things. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, this is again how women get caught in this terrible feedback loop of like, you are responsible for everything. So all of this to say, contraception is important. You should talk to your doctor about what the best method of contraception is for you and like how to stick to it.
Right. And also knowing your body is cool too, but like, don't conflate those two things always.
Oh my God. Please, my body is probably trying to get pregnant all the time, so no thank you.
Oh my God. Can I tell you a disturbing thing that happened when I tried to load this article?
Tell me.
Which is, for some reason, like, you know how sometimes like the ads in something load faster or like load differently than the actual content?
Yes.
This article about the contraceptive app, loaded a like, hey, like recommended stories up next video of a woman in a spacesuit that says, I wore a Mars spacesuit and it was exhausting. And for a split second, I thought that there was some sort of contraception full body suit that was being hit with complaints after being blamed for 37 unwanted pregnancies. And I was like, wow.
I'm like,
if it could get through the suit.
I'm like, that's a risk I'm willing to take. Give me the suit.
Exactly. You know, a totally natural full body spacesuit that you wear to prevent pregnancy.
Full body condom.
Full body condom. I feel like that's a good segue into Kim had her baby, if you want.
What do you think they're going to call it? It's a girl.
Great game. I mean, Natural Cycles is already taken. East? South? Like, just, those are probably seem popular in the baby name pool. I don't know. I mean, like,
North,
what, are, what
North
is your money
is such
on?
A good name. I'm like, I don't know, man. I was convinced that Kylie was Kim's surrogate, which is why we hadn't seen Kylie yet. But, you know, because I love drama. So I was like, oh my God, what would be better than having a surrogate? It's having your own sister carry the baby. That's genius.
Naturally.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure that's not what happened. So we're also still waiting for Kylie's baby.
You don't sound that excited.
I'm not going to lie to you. I have a little bit of Kardashian fatigue.
Whoa. Is this because of like everything with like the multiple pregnancy announcements, like orchestrated reveal?
Yeah, I feel like they didn't stagger the pregnancies well enough for me.
Maybe they were using an app.
Yeah, you know, that's not it. I just, you know, like some weeks where you're like, oh, the politics are so fucked up. I don't have time for like pop culture shit. That's how mm-hmm. I feel. I'm like, once Assad introduces the baby on his Instagram, then I'll be into it again.
I can't.
Oh my God. Did you see that DJ Khaled is a Weight Watchers spokesperson with
Oprah?
Oh
my God, I did.
And I am
I did.
Dying. I just like, I have so many thoughts about this, but I think DJ Khaled is just right. And I don't want him to get sucked into Oprah's body issue problems. But also, I am like fascinated.
And there is a part of me too that's like, for something that has been so gendered as a thing, like, I mean, listen, this is not like a positive thing, right? But it's sort of like one of those when terrible pressures of the patriarchy come home to roost for men too kind of thing, where I'm like, ooh, not happy that this is being extended to everyone when I would rather it just ends, but also on a level of this is not just something that is sold as a thing for women to worry about. I don't know. It's
I
a
know.
Complicated
It's like,
stew.
If it had been like any other male celebrity, I would legit worry about body dysmorphia. And then with DJ Khaled, I was like, wow, you're really in this just for the money. Like, this is amazing.
Oh, completely.
Like, this is amazing. But also, it's like the product is really funny. Weight Watchers is like the perfect scam, right? It's like, first, it's like, you got to come to all these classes, talk to people. And then every couple of years, they like rebrand so that you buy their shit.
Oh, it's so, the WW freestyle. That's what it
okay,
is.
Okay, yes. I was going to call it Remix. So, for, you know, like first they're like, now we do points, right? So it's like, you got to hoard all your points for a glass of wine so you can't eat, like all this shit. And now they're doing this freestyle thing, which just means that you could do whatever you want, basically, or like whatever the version of that is. And I was like, this, like, capitalism is so dirty. It's just, it is so dirty. It's like also, you know, but on some level, it's like, I see why for some people, this kind of diet, it like makes sense. But then when you think about like how much stuff they're trying to sell you instead of teaching you how to eat normally, or you're just like, I don't believe any of this. But also like, if DJ Khaled is the owner of your diet, like, I don't know what you want for your life.
The first thought that I had when I saw this was like, how many points is Ciroc? Like the like very public aspects of like what I know he consumes, which like, you know, lots of like lovingly photographed fruit salads and things like that too. Just like the idea that like multiple endorsements, how does the picture of the dirty capitalist game of all these different types of endorsements fit together for someone like that? I don't know. It's fascinating. I would love to see the balance sheet.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, like when you were talking about like how gendered this thing is, the thing that I definitely noticed from the announcement when they announced like DJ Khaled is that like he gets to be the social media ambassador. Like, I think that that's a little different. But also like when all of his ads are very different from when they had women do the ads, like the women are always like, oh my God, you can eat bread now. Or you can, like, there's such a still a focus on food. And with him, like there is just a focus on motivation. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like, oh, I'm doing this so I can be there for my son and I can make new habits. Like, he has not mentioned like one item of food. And usually like when people become Weight Watchers spokespeople, they've already lost a lot of weight. Like, right. That's how they get you in. Like, this is what Jennifer Hudson did to get smaller. Here's what Oprah has been doing. But DJ Khaled, he just like gets to be himself, which I guess is like commendable on one level. But on the other level, I'm like, I'm a woke feminist, so I see everything that's happening here.
Yeah, he's like the perfect pivot for a company that is 100% making a profit off of diet culture, but also wants to say it's not about diet culture and it's not about external body norms and fat phobia. It's about being your best self. You know, like, it's like he's the perfect, like, all of this, like, all of these talking points are exactly aligned with that.
I know, like, but also, and he says that eggs, chicken, and sashimi are major keys, and they're on the menu. So. Like, my God, my God. Yeah, this whole thing is just, like, very, I'm like, this is, if they have a woman who is DJ Khaled's size, like, doing Weight Watchers ads, then I will believe that Weight Watchers is not evil.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, of, like, being, like, okay, like, actually, part of this contract doesn't mean, like, that your body, you know, is not allowed to change, right? Like, the idea that, like, maybe he could be an ambassador, like, in a true context of, like, this is about wellness and, like, maybe actually gain weight. Like, some people, when they're getting healthy, like, build muscle and end up, like, gaining weight, like, not losing a ton of weight. Like, you know, like, if they're, there are, like,
that's
points.
That's too much nuance for the wellness conversation. What?
This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying, though.
No,
I'm like,
I mean,
like,
I agree.
Maybe they could prove me wrong in the long term, but I am skeptical.
Yeah, yeah. We're just, you know, it's like CYG. We 100% believe in healthy lifestyles, but also, like, our third eyes are wide open.
Did you just call us a lifestyle brand?
Inshallah, one day.
One day, third eye lifestyle brand.
Speaking along the lines of, like, body image, CVS Pharmacies, you know, a beloved pharmacy of some people, listen, we have friends who are fanatics about CVS beauty products. You know what I'm talking about.
I mean, I'm a fanatic about the CVS eye drops. That's about it. Maybe this is a separate episode, like, not endorsing.
This is a separate episode. We'll talk about, like, lipsticks that you could buy at CVS that will change your life.
Oh,
that's
God.
A different episode.
Not for free, though.
Listen, this is capitalism. Nothing is free. But one, like, kind of remarkable thing is that CVS just announced that they are no longer going to digitally alter any of their in-house beauty ads. So, like, that seems like a small thing, but actually is a really big thing because all of these pharmacies, like, make a hella money selling beauty products. And if you hadn't noticed, they, like, Photoshop the shit out of everybody. So, they're, like, the beauty standards are ludicrous.
Help me understand what an in-house beauty ad is. Is it, like, the stuff at the end of the aisle that's, like, a photo of, like...
Yeah.
That's, like, this is the makeup aisle or whatever, like that? Or on the packages or what?
Yes. The, like, beautiful blonde lady that'll be, like, here's the makeup aisle. And she looks, like, definitely, like, only 3 years younger than your mom. But she looks beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Like, they always have those ads. And that's for, like, the CVS branded products. And the thing is that, like, those ads are, like, huge. They're just, like, full blown all over the store to the point where most people don't even realize, you know? But the, like, the Photoshopping is out of control. I'm not opposed to some, like, retouching every once in a while. But when you're literally altering people's, like, faces, I'm not into that. You know, it's really easy to be like, well, you know, like, I'm a responsible consumer of media or whatever. But this stuff actually, like, studies shows that, like, in young girls and in young women, like, it really perpetrates, like, unrealistic body images and has a ton of negative health effects.
Yeah, it's funny because reading this article, they say that ads that have not been altered or photoshopped or retouched will have an ad that they're calling the beauty mark, watermark on the top right corner. Mm-hmm. But, like, if we had, like, a real consumer protection agency, having a similar thing but that indicates it is photoshopped seems like a better policy to me. Like, what if every magazine cover had to contain, like, a label that says, like, this is is actually a computer, not a person. Like, this is like completely, like, that's the sort of thing I think would make a difference. Cause part of me is like, okay, like, it's cool to have your internal logic about this, but like, it is.
Right. It's like the damage has already been done. People already know what these like photoshopped, like, or unrealistic body image they look like. But also, I'm always so shocked that we're still having this conversation, because I feel like it was a big conversation a couple of years ago, for sure.
I mean, 2010 Jezebel, yeah.
I know, when Jezebel started buying the unretouched photos of magazines. But even before then, I feel like there's always been an awareness of this. But at the same time, like, yeah, it's like capitalism is dirty. Like, there's this, I don't know if you saw this maybe recently. There is, what's her name? Wife of David Beckham, Victoria Beckham. Mm-hmm. Who is like a fashion mogul in her own right. But anyway, there is like a sunglass ad for her brand where the model is very, 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 very thin. Like, thin in a way that I had not seen in an ad since like the 90s.
Since the heroin chic era.
Yeah, since I was like, oh no, these are the ads like our moms used to write in about. Like, nobody, who does this anymore? And I was like, oh, like, this is what happens when you don't have forceful standards about this stuff, is that like people will slip back into these like very retro ideas of like what you're allowed to do. And you know, I feel that like most fashion people had been chastened into like not doing that kind of advertising anymore, and in fact, like, that's not true. It's like, this is what happens when you don't have a union. But that's a different conversation.
It's true. And it's also, there is a part of me that's like seeing this label on a woman who is like very, like, already conventional beauty standards accepting, like, blonde, thin, white, like, whatever. And seeing this, like, don't worry, it wasn't Photoshopped stamp. There is a part of me that's like, really? Like, that's bragging at a certain point. You look at like this woman right. who is like also very beautiful and clearly also wearing a lot of makeup and whatever. And is
I'm
like,
just like, bring back pores. Like, what is happening here?
Oh my God, pores. Where have you gone? Yeah.
I know. It's like this kind of stuff I feel like we have a general awareness of, but then, you know, I would have been like so helpful to know when I was like that 15-year-old reading beauty magazines. I think about like so many young girls who just get like taken into this, and it's so easy to be cynical about it, but I'm like, no, like, this stuff actually like matters, but nobody is doing like smart education around it.
Yeah, it was interesting though. I mean, I do think that it can creep in even when you are aware of what's going on and you're like not a young girl, because I had a conversation with a friend who'd spent a few weeks in Cuba recently, and she was like, yeah, like, it actually did make me feel different about myself to be in a place that I was not bombarded with advertising like all the time out in the world. Mm-hmm. I felt differently, and it was a thing that I didn't notice until I kind of came back and was seeing like this kind of one-note depiction of women and women's bodies everywhere I went, that I realized how good it had felt to not be confronted with that as I was just like going about my day. And so I'm not like full-on tinfoil, like subliminal messages, like arguing here, but it's definitely true that it has an effect.
No, advertising works. It works. It 100% has an effect on you. And also, and I think that that's honestly the part that is so dangerous, is that it's like you don't realize how much it's affecting you until you're confronted by it, right? And it's like thinking about even things like how the like beauty aesthetic on reality TV has changed so much or whatever, and how quickly these like beauty norms are changing, or how like so many people are having plastic surgery and not talking about it or whatever. And, you know, like the magazines are just like, why don't you look this good? And it's like, well, actually, it's a this is a question that like involves a lot of tools.
Yeah, it's like an interesting question, right? Like, where are the rules around this sort of thing? Like, if you've had quite a lot of plastic surgery and you are like the makeup is like airbrushed on your face in like extreme layers by a professional, and your photo is on a CVS ad, but you have not been digitally retouched, like, does it get the stamp of approval? You know what I mean? It's like all part of the same type of stuff.
Yeah, the game's dirty. I feel like we're running away from our
Me Too. I know we are. Like, do you want to do
that? We should
check in on like the Me Too backlash wave, which is cresting. Neither of us want to do it. I feel like it's very telling that like I don't. It's not that I feel like over this. Like, I am still avidly like reading about many things that are happening in many industries, but I am having, I don't know.
I just can't do the day to day of it, honestly. I think that there's two things that are happening for me. Is that one, some of it is definitely triggering me and I'm not dealing with it because, you know, like, not that I think that like I'm above being triggered or whatever. Like, it's like I consume so much media. But I have to say that the everything around the gymnastics girls has been like really hard for me to stomach.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That has just been like really, really, really incredibly hard. I think that the other thing that I'm having too is that everything is moving so fast. And I feel that like we're at the point of the wave where all of the hypocrites are coming out of the woodwork right now, where I'm like, let's see. Because everybody wants like every day to be monumental. And like, you know, and I'm like, why don't you people just wait to have more information? Not everything has to move at this like breakneck speed, but also everybody is like so is being a vigilante about the backlash right now, right? Where trying to squash like every lying woman that could like potentially lie about this. And I was like, it's just like interesting to see people who think that like they're being the reasonable ones do very unreasonable
things. Yeah, I mean, there's a thing happening here where like Catherine Deneuve and like the letter from all of those women who like, I think she has since said some kind of apology for it, or like
she has apologized to the women who have been like sexually abused. She's like, I'm sorry to you, right. But she is not sorry about signing the letter that she signed.
Right. She has not apologized to all of womanity as is required. Yeah. And then like, you know, like then there's the strain that is like the Margaret Atwood, I'm just here for due process types who are somehow conflating every single thing that's happened with like a call for men to be jailed or something like that. Like when I get so angry when I see people being like, but due process. And it's like, actually, in many, many cases, the women who are coming forward about these stories are not saying, lock them up. Like, you know,
I'm like, yeah. Who has gone to jail? Like, what?
Right.
I'm like, what? Like, what is happening here?
Right. And it's like this, it is honestly, I think it's a response to a perceived tone in like the conversation in media. It is not a response to what women and other people are saying when they come forward with an actual story. And like, that's what's, it's the straw woman argument that is like, kind of like an older generation cool girl type thing of like, you know, let's like due process is still important. I am all for the people who were like, you know, victims of Harvey Weinstein or people who were harassed in the workplace by a superior with like a violent aspect. You know what I mean? There's all these like ifs, like trying to like set a series of criteria for like, when is it okay to share your story publicly? And like, that is the biggest red flag to me of like, you are not listening to the women who are actually speaking.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right about that. I think that one thing that I have been feeling, and I've talked to somebody else who is like I've talked about this on the podcast about being like a survivor of childhood sexual assault and also like adulthood sexual assault, I guess. And you just like realize that part of not wanting to, it's like even reasonable people say very cruel things, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that there is just this, there's just this undercurrent, like where there are some people who are like, okay, we're just going to sit back and we're going to listen to the rest of you talk about all of the stuff. And you're reminded why people are still afraid to like tell their stories. Because anytime anybody tells their story, it is this electrifying moment, both for the people who are hearing it and for the person who is telling it. And a lot of times, like the people who are supposed to be listening are not listening to what that person is saying. Nobody's asking for anybody to go to jail. I'm dying for somebody to be like, what about the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure? Nobody's calling for your like Twitter to be canceled. Women are just still telling you that they have been hurt. It's like, I'm thinking particularly about this woman who wrote about her dating and her like the date that she went on with Aziz Ansari, mm-hmm. and how like the Reading that, so I have so many feelings about this. I think that that woman was done a huge disservice by the place that she chose to tell her story.
Absolutely.
But I'm also not a fool, and I like know that probably part of the reason that she told her story there is because she didn't have anywhere else to tell her story. So yeah, it's like we can discuss the journalism of it, but they're just like, that encounter was so graphic. Not graphic, like the detail of it was so, it was like you were in the room with them. And just like hearing kind of the pain that is coming from this person and then seeing the 10,000 pieces from like everywhere from the Atlantic to the New York Times, like condemning her about her own experience has been like really instructive for me. And the thing is that like there's a way to talk to this person, whether you agree with her or not, that the encounter that she had was sexual abuse that is not cruel,
right?
You know? And that doesn't invalidate how she feels. Because part of the conversation that we are having about Me Too and that feminists have been having since the beginning of time is that like maybe the way that dating is does not serve the best interest of women. And like it doesn't serve our pleasure and it doesn't make us happy. You know, and I think that you can debate about whether what this woman has said, you should go and read it yourself, whether that amounts to sexual abuse or not. Like you can decide that for yourself. But like here is a relatively powerless person who is telling you about like the pain that she is experiencing and went on this date where like, frankly, to me, I'm like the first word that comes to mind is coercion and mm-hmm. this like terrible, terrible experience that she's had. And then to hear women like Caitlin Flanagan and that terrible one at the New York Times whose name I won't even say because she like drives me crazy. She's like the most irresponsible human being in the world. Like, you know, just to be like, why didn't she leave? Why didn't she? And I'm like, are you listening to yourself? How many steps backwards is this setting women that literally now the standard, you know, it's like, why weren't you strong enough to resist the advances of a famous person? And why didn't you get yourself out of that room? I was like, we've already litigated all of these things. Like, we know why women don't do them. And also, like, this person is just telling you her story. She's not asking for anything. She is like clearly, like something traumatic happened to her and she has a right like everybody else to tell her story. And then we can like parse out like what we feel about it. But like being like cruel and unkind to her is not like the way to move the conversation forward.
Absolutely. And then, you know how you know it's a backlash is when they do this pretty incredible flip, right? Where they're like, listen, I'm looking at Margaret Atwood in particular here, but other people do this as well of like, listen, I'm a feminist. You know, like I believe rape is bad. Like I'm
You're
not
like
a monster.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I believe women who have been through real trauma. Like there that is like the you know implication here, right? Like and yet there is this implied like note of I get to make the rules about whose stories are worth hearing, and I get to make the rules about what everyone should be doing about those stories. Like the idea that it's not just, as you say, this woman should be able to talk about what happened to her and leave it at that and not like be responsible for other people saying this guy should be fired or thrown in jail or whatever. Like, no, no, like that's too much. Like she has to be used as essentially proof of these other feminists, like intellectual independence from the idea of believing women or like, and I think this is interesting too. It's not even about believing women. It's hearing women, like basically hearing them. That's it. Like you don't even have to, no one is asking Margaret Atwood to believe what this woman is saying and like in her heart of hearts, like change how she feels about Aziz Ansari or anyone else. All we're asking is, take her story into account, like know it and like use that to make your own choices about how you want to deal with his work. Like it is not like there is a, you know, multi-page petition calling for him to be axed from his relationship with Netflix right, or like whatever.
Right. Right. And also like Aziz Ansari does not exist in a vacuum, right? Like here's a guy that has made a career off of like calling himself a feminist, off of reinforcing the fact that like unlike other guys he understands nonverbal cues, like so much of his stand-up is about that, And, you know, like, he's, like, the nice guy. And the thing is that, like,
and again, wrote a book about dating, P.S. Like, exactly. Wrote a book about dating, yeah.
Wrote a book about dating that I actually recommend to a lot of people because, and like, and I think we've discussed this on the show before where I've said that it was the first time that I read a dating book that was engendered, you know? It right. was, like, for everybody because, like, most dating books are, like, women are from Mars, like, men love bitches. It's always, like, everybody buy your own separate book and then read it and then we'll meet in the middle somewhere, right? And I'm like, and also, like, you know, to be clear, like, make up your own mind about, like, what you think about that encounter. But that woman is not telling that story out, like, you know, completely in a vacuum. It's like, here's the reality of the world that we live in. And here's the other thing. If we had more honest conversations about how just, like, even nice guys have shitty sex all the time and how bad dating is, and we used precise words and precise vocabulary, and we really talked about, like, all of these, like, terrible sexual encounters that are not criminal encounters, people wouldn't need to, like, tell their life stories to, like, websites named babe.net, because we had been having that conversation for a long time, you know? And, like, for me, like, that's part of it. The other part of it, like, the thing that I've been really disappointed in the response to this, and, like, some people have said that it's generational. I don't believe that because I had, like, I've seen, like, women, like, my own age.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that it's a generational thing, but I do think that there are, like, women who, like, pride themselves in, like, being strong and in being self-sufficient and in, like, you know, like, knowing, you know, it's almost like the war reporter model of, like, uh-huh. I know how to get out of the Congo. Like, what are you going to do? Like, where there is this, like, looking down on other women for these choices that they make and to make them look weak in this moment, you know? And that for me has been really hard to stomach. Just like, I'm like, this woman is, like, 23. I think about, like, where, like, I think about myself at 23, and I feel very tender about this person, whether you think that it was just, like, a celebrity day gone wrong, or you think that it's the complete other end of the spectrum. It's like, we're just, like, people trying to make it in the world, and, like, shit like this can destabilize you for a really long time. I am somebody who has gone through, like, all sorts of sexual trauma, and on my good days, I think that I, like, handle life pretty well, and I, you know, I'm like, I've gotten over it and I'm, like, navigating through the world and everything is fine. But it's like, there are the hard days, there are the shitty days. And hearing, like, a national conversation about this that just, like, basically shuts down somebody for telling their story, or even worse, like, blames them for being in a place that they were not supposed to be, is, like, that has been really hard for me to stomach. That's what makes me, like, curl up into my bed in fetal position.
Yeah. And, you know, when I hear that too, I think about some of, like, the big picture arguments made by some of the women who are, there are some men saying this too, but I'm going to specifically say, like, the women who are saying, oh, if you choose to believe women, all women's stories that they're saying, and you are choosing to listen to them as important, then you are, like, somehow implying that all women are victims, all women are weak, like, that strain of argument where there is a clear desire to distance themselves from the idea that this type of behavior is widespread and part of everyday life for a large percentage of people in this country, as if that will somehow protect them or has. And I truly believe that that goes so deep. Oh, maybe if I, in my head, say that this is not as widespread as it really is, that these women are outliers or are complaining or are lumping things together that don't need to be lumped together, or any variety of argument, then I am safe. Like, I truly think that that is the lie that they tell themselves.
I think that's true. Or that if something hasn't happened to you, that it's not, can't be a universal experience for a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, like, you see this so much, and, like, even on a smaller level, like, people are like, well, I've never been street harassed, or I've never been whatever, like, harassed or blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, that's great. But again, you're making, like, this like, very individual thing out to discredit, like, a systemic thing that we know is real. I'm so stuck on, like, having empathy and compassion for people who tell their stories, for women who do it, because the thing is that, like, every single time it proves to be just, like, earth shattering. Even this Aziz Ansari account that everybody is condemning, I'm remembering that the first story about Gian Gomeshi was basically exactly this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was, like, a woman who, like, wrote a blog post. She didn't even, like, go to journalists, big air quotes, but she, like, wrote a blog post about, like, a terrible dating encounter that she had with him. And then it opened these floodgates, right? It's like, well, this is day two of Ansari Gate. Like, let's see what the rest of the week brings and what the rest of the month brings. Right? And it's like, and maybe nobody will come forward, and you can still make up your mind about what you think that somebody who calls themselves like a progressive dude, like this is how he treats the women that he dates, or, you know, or you can say that that means nothing to you. But it's so wild to me to like stake your entire opinion and claim on just like one example, and also just to try to crucify this young woman for a thing that is like, you know, like Oprah says, like tell your truth. And then everybody can decide, you know, like people can decide what that is. There's also just this like undercurrent of like people don't realize that like women can be skeptical readers, and you know,
wait, what? Like, I'm right, sorry. That like, be, that,
like
wait,
I can
really?
That I can read this woman's account, right, and be like, oh my god, like who edited this piece? This is crazy. I would not have included these details. Like what a, you know, like what a terrible disservice you were done, and also still grapple with the issues that are there, right? Like this woman telling her story is not what is going to destroy Aziz Ansari's career. Like, are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, completely. And I think too that like, I don't know if you saw the whole exchange with Dan Harmon and the woman who had worked.
You know, I was going to bring that up next. That's great. Okay.
I think that, so this is, Dan Harmon is a guy who created the show Community and like, you know, whatever, is like a big TV writer person, and a woman who had worked in a position of like less seniority than him on one of the shows that he'd worked on, had shared about her experience of being hit on by him and rebuffing his advances and then being like frozen out in the workplace as a result. And, you know, this is, I think, something she had maybe alluded to before or said something about before, but really reiterated and was clearer about, in part because this is a moment when a lot of women are reiterating and being clearer about their experiences. And he apologized to her. And in a way that was not just kind of like a cover your ass legalese. And essentially, as part of the apology, said, like, you weren't crazy. I did, in fact, get bitter and like make your life in the office harder after you rejected me, my advances, which I shouldn't have made in the first place because I was your boss.
And I poisoned the workplace for every other person.
Exactly.
There also in doing that, like it wasn't just like the two of them that it involved. It involved like their relationships with everybody.
And I think that that's really important because she has since said like, I am satisfied with this, essentially. Like, not like I'm happy it happened, but like really the acknowledgement that I wasn't crazy, that what you did was wrong, and that you screwed things up for me in particular and for lots of other people, and you're sorry for it. All of those things are what I wanted. And she's like, I read his apology because she linked to it. Like, you know, she was like, yeah, go read this. And I think that that is such a perfect counterexample to people who are like, everyone who shares a story that is anything on a spectrum from Harvey Weinstein to Aziz Ansari and everything on either direction and everywhere else is trying to like lump it together and send like men to jail and get them fired for minor offenses should take note of, because she's like, she is a great example of someone who was like, this is what I wanted to happen. I wanted the conversation. I wanted the apology. I wanted the reassurance that I wasn't crazy. It's like, I drew a lot of hope from that moment in what has otherwise been like really difficult and toxic.
Yeah. Her name is Megan Gans. You should follow her on Twitter. And
yes,
you should listen to Dan Harmon's apology because it was on his podcast. It was really healing for me in a way, because I'm just like, wow, like you're telling the entire truth here. And the thing that she responded to him, that's the point that you made, is that she said, she's like, it's not about revenge, it's about vindication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's all that she wanted. Like, nobody is playing this like long game of like, this is how we're going to get all the jobs, send all the men to jail. I mean, that's my long game. But
for you personally, okay?
I know, like, but in the meetings, they don't let me say it out loud. You know, but I know that we're in this like very powerful moment where everybody is just on high alert about a lot of things. But I think that just like remembering to have a little bit of empathy, and as much as you can to have sympathy for people who are going through all of this, like, these are conversations that are worth having, you know, and especially like, you know, take it away from the Hollywood like celebrity aspect of it. It's like, these are conversations that are worth having like in our own like friend circles, right?
Right.
And really challenging each other about like when like there's somebody in your group that doesn't make people feel safe, or like you've had encounters that are, you know, like that have been, that have not been optimal in dating and things like that.
If you see someone and they make you feel icky and gross because of a thing that you didn't do, because of a thing they did that is related to their power in the world, like all of this stuff.
Right. It's like all of this stuff has, the actual way that you know that like this stuff is changing and that things are different is when it has like real effects in like your own community, like your own, like hits close to home, because it's not going away. We're going to keep talking about it. It's going to keep making people really uncomfortable. And also, like, we don't have the muscle yet of knowing how to process all of this information. And I think that, like, that's one thing that is really overwhelming. But the only thing that I would challenge everybody with is that whenever you say something out loud about how you feel about, like, assault or rape or whatever, is to really remember that there are people who are listening to you who that has happened to. And sometimes, like, the things that you say are the reasons that, like, they're not sharing their story.
Right. They're not just, like, abstracted opinions about this issue. They, like, very much affect how individuals feel about their lives and the things that have happened to them and their right to exist and tell their truth in the world.
Whew.
Which, P.S. survivors, you have a right to tell your truth and exist in the world, and we love you. P.S.
Yeah. Love you, I know. These conversations are really hard to have. I really am, like, I really go... there are days where I don't want to talk about it at all. All I want to do is take a shower and cry. There are days where all I want to do is talk about it. But it's really tough. It's really, really tough. And the only thing I know is that, like, the more we talk about it, the more healing can happen. But yeah, it's just, like, the shit is hard. So if this conversation is hard for you, there is no shame in that. You don't have to listen to it. We will put a content warning at the top. And, you know, like, you can come back to it whenever you want. And there's no shame in, like, not wanting to talk about Me Too and any of it. Because guess what? It's not, like, a hashtag for some of us. It's literally our whole lives every single day.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a moment. Like, this is just reality for, like, many, many, many people who are just trying to get through it. Oh, I love you. I'm sorry. I'm just like, I'm picturing you just like crying in the shower. I want to tell you I love you.
Oh, you know I love to cry in the shower. My God.
I know.
The perfect place.
Wet everywhere.
It's already wet. Yeah, I'm like tissue on the face. It's just, you know, it's hard being a woman in this world. It's just hard.
Yeah. I really do feel like my new response, if I am like working out some anger about things that diminish the experience of survivors on social media, I will reply to articles with, would you read this in front of a room full of survivors? Would you read this in a room full of survivors? Like, I truly am like, I challenge anyone who has written something like this to say it to the faces of many people they know are living this as a reality. They can't. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. On that note, I'm going to go cry in the shower because it's been a long day.
Okay. I'll see you on the internet after. Don't take that phone in with you.
I will see you on the internet, boo-boo.
You can find us many places on the internet on our website, callyourgirlfriend.com. You can download it anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast or on Apple Podcasts, where we'd love it if you left us a review. You can email us at callyrgf@gmail.com. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at callyrgf. You can subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Bleed, on the Call Your Girlfriend website. You can even leave us a short and sweet voicemail at 714-681-2943. That's 714-681-CYGF. Our theme song is by Robin. All original music is composed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. Our logos are by Kenesha Sneed, and this podcast is produced by Gina Delbach.